Today on Vox Talks Economics, the workers who do high-polluting jobs and what the green transition will mean to them. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember, subscribe, follow us on Instagram as well. If you do a high-polluting job, then the green transition means there's good news and bad news. Well, let's take the bad news first. There's a pretty high chance that your job is going to disappear soon. But the good news is that there may still be a planet on which you can find new work. But if we want to help those millions of working people who have high-polluting jobs to make this transition, first, we need to know more about what they do and where they are. And that's the focus of two new papers from the OECD. Orsetta Kauser of the OECD is one of the authors. She joins me now. Orsetta, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Thank you, Tim.
Now, Orsetta, we think a lot about high-polluting sectors, high-polluting industries, high-polluting firms. I think we've probably done Vox Talks about all of those. Why is it important to think about high-polluting jobs as well?
Well, because thinking about high-polluting jobs is thinking concretely about people and their communities, because associated activities are often concentrated in specific places and social demographic groups, and those are generally not the most favored. So greening the economy can have significant impacts on labor market outcomes and inequalities, for instance, in terms of economic job transformation, skills demand and training, and so territorial disparities. So while aggregate effects could be relatively small, the combination of policies and technological change that bring about decarbonization will require reallocation of production factors, and this could have distributional effects, with risk of increasing inequality by affecting disproportionately certain categories of workers and their communities. So if you like, there is a parallel with the economic and social impact of globalization, at least in advanced economies. So one lesson from the impact of globalization and technological change is that moderate aggregate effect or even aggregate gains can go hand in hand with concentrated losses for certain groups of workers and their communities, especially when the changes take place rapidly. Preventing this from happening in the green transition requires understanding the labor market dynamics and elaborating appropriate policy responses, which is fundamental, let me add, also for political acceptability. Maybe we can come back to this later.
Yes, we can. First of all, I guess that not everyone in a high-polluting firm has a high-polluting job. Can you give me an example of how there are, in the same firm or the same industry, high-polluting jobs and low-polluting jobs?
Sure. But first, let me just give you a brief intro on the way we do that and we measure that.
Yeah.
The underlying analytical and data work is quite complicated.
It is. I read it. Yes.
And so green jobs, what they are, they basically are occupations that involve green tasks and are hence expected to face increasing demand because of the green transition. High polluting jobs, those are occupations that are overrepresented in economic sectors producing large share of air polluting emissions. So the list of high polluting occupation and green occupation resulting from the approach, they are not mutually exclusive, nor do they span the entire universe of occupation. So an occupation could belong only one of the two lists, both, and importantly, neither of those.
Mm-hmm.
So a small share of occupation is classified as both green and high polluting. Why? Because the task's content makes them likely to be pivotal in the green transition. And they are, in other words, you do green tasks, but you are working in a high polluting industry. And this is very important. Why? Because one implication is that some workers that work in high polluting industries, such as utilities and manufacturing, may have the competencies to perform green tasks and so to green the industry. So to give you an example, this could be physical and engineering science technician, life-size professionals, machinery mechanics and repairers, chemicals and machine operators. This is important because this means that they can work out, they can contribute to work out the green transition because they're able to perform green tasks and they contribute to greening the high polluting industries and because they can relocate otherwise to greener industries. This is why we think that this type of jobs that one can find in both categories are an important part of the green transition.
I see, but what about people who are only in the high polluting category? What's the problem if we don't help those people to find green or greener jobs?
The challenges are particularly pressing for these workers, okay, that work in high emission activities. And even though we make lots of efforts and firms make a lot of effort in terms of reconversion, green subsidy schemes, etc., there will be some job losses. And so this highlights the importance of policies to support displaced workers by providing income support, facilitating the transition to new jobs. And let me add, not necessarily only green jobs, because most jobs are neither green nor brown. So there is no problem. They can go in jobs that are in higher demand, for example, the care, leisure, hospitality. One objective in this respect, replying to your question, what happens if we don't do the necessary thing, is to avoid that displaced workers face long-term unemployment, scarring, labor market detachment, which has dramatic social, economic, and growth consequences. This is, for me, the risk of policy inaction in this area to support job displacement in the green transition. We really need to anticipate and to have forward-looking up and reskilling policies to ensure that workers in declining high-emission activities can develop the skills that are needed to make successful transitions in expanding activities, again, whether green or nor green nor brown. So this is not only to reduce the cost of job displacement by shortening the time spent out of work, but also increasing the pre-employment wage and minimize scarring and make people, workers, seize upon emerging opportunities even before displacement takes place.
Can emerging economies transform without creating greenflation or reducing output? Last year, Florencia Airaudu had some sobering news about the projected impact of the green transition. Listen to our episode called A Troublesome Transition from April 2023.
There have been attempts before, haven't they, to identify high polluting jobs and the people who are doing these high polluting jobs. In your research, what are you doing that's new?
We definitely have a new approach in this paper. So in the literature, high polluting jobs are broadly defined as job prevalent in high emitting industries. So we're doing the same. But due to data limitations, high polluting jobs have generally been identified based on US emissions. So implicitly making the assumption that the same ranking of emission intensity by industry holds across countries, despite differences in production technologies and environmental policies. And recent cross-country analysis have tended to use this approach, so basically to use the US classification of high-polluting industries and apply it to other countries. We have a new approach to identify high-polluting jobs, which is based on European emission data by country and industry. So the main advantage of relying on country-specific data on emission is that it allows to capture the cross-country heterogeneity in emission intensity by industry. I mean, this makes sense because when we apply the analysis, we show that the difference can be very substantive. For example, in electricity, gas, steam, and air conditioning supply, the most polluting countries emit around 4 times more greenhouse gas emission per worker than the least polluting ones.
What data can you use to do this? How many countries can you get data for?
The analysis uses industry-level pollution intensity per worker by combining data from Eurostat air emission account and national employment accounts. And so we covered Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Ireland, Italy, the Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Portugal, the Slovak Republic, Slovenia, Spain, Sweden, and the United Kingdom. And so we are able to convey a list of high-polluting industries, which, by contrast with the previous literature, is going to vary potentially across countries.
Now, we're talking about high-polluting jobs, but what pollutants do you include to make a job high-polluting?
We have a quite complicated method to identify all of this stuff, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. which is based basically on the previous literature on the US by Vona and co-authors, typically. So we follow that kind of approach and apply it in our context. And we are with the new approach of having country-specific industry emissions. So following Vona, we have carbon monoxide, non-methane volatile organic compounds, and nitrogen oxide, SOx, particulate matter of different kind, and carbon dioxide, which is what the World Health Organization identifies as particularly harmful for human health and local ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Then within each country and for each pollutant, industries are ranked in terms of pollution intensity. So a given industry is classified as high polluting in a given country if it belongs to the top 50% most polluting industries for at least 3 of the 7 pollutants. This is 3 of 7 rule. Mm-hmm. So it's a standard approach in the literature, is also robust to alternatives, which we have also produced. So it is a quite robust rule, but is a better rule than having a continuous one. The only thing that is important to take into account is that this analysis does not cover methane emissions, which often originate from agriculture. But because non-methane emissions are generally low in agriculture, the 3 out of 7 rule implies that agriculture would not be identified as high polluting industry, even if methane were added to the list of pollutants. Now, of course, on a country by country basis, this can be a very important environmental issues to be addressed. For example, in a country that has a large agricultural sector, such as Ireland. And this requires a more granular country approach.
Now, when you get that list of high polluting industries, is that list the same across all the countries you look at?
No, it's not. There are commonalities and differences, and this is really like a proof of concept of the fact that it's important to take into account cross-country heterogeneity in industry emissions. Some industries will be identified as high polluting in the vast majority of countries, such as the case as, for example, electricity, gas, steam, and air conditioning supply, with the exception of France, for reasons that we can imagine about nuclear power. Mm-hmm. And some industries will only be polluting in a few countries, like sewage and waste and land transport. And these differences are mainly reflecting various factors, such as the diversity in industrial structure for sure, but also energy efficiency and technology.
So let's have a look at some of these results. First of all, I guess, what proportion of jobs are high polluting? And is that proportion the same across all countries? Do some countries have more high polluting jobs than others?
Absolutely. So, of course, you have to take these numbers with a pinch of salt because any measurement is, of course, dependent on the methodology. But what do we get? That according to our analysis, the employment share of high polluting jobs is around 4% on average across the European countries we're covering. Mm-hmm. But there's a wide variation from around 9% in the Czech Republic and Slovak Republic to around 2% in Portugal and Austria.
We might have an idea in our heads about the sort of people who are doing these jobs. So are people who do high polluting jobs generally less educated?
This is a very interesting and very relevant question. Yeah. Again, for the kind of introduction we had about the importance of displacement effect, etc. Mm-hmm. So the mm-hmm. evidence on the distribution of high polluting jobs is super important for identifying ex-ante the works that would be most vulnerable to the green transition and may require well-designed targeted support. So what do we get? First, that men are much more likely than women to have high polluting jobs. On average, we have 6% of male workers having a high polluting jobs, which is almost 5 times higher than female, which reflects the fact that men tend to be overrepresented in relatively high polluting industries such as utilities and transport, while women tend to be overrepresented in less polluting industries, typically services like hospitality, education. Regarding education, what do we find? We find that workers who attain lower or medium level of education are more likely to have high polluting jobs relative to those with higher educational attainment. So, for instance, on average, 5% of middle and low educated workers have high polluting jobs, contrasting with 1.6% of high educated workers. And let me add that in both cases of gender and education, these disparities are particularly strong in countries who feature a high share of high polluting workers. Whereas one quite surprising, actually, we found, but not new finding in the literature, that there is no stark differences across age groups.
Ah, that surprises me. I would have thought that the sorts of jobs that would be high polluting are perhaps industrial type jobs that were more prevalent in the past, and so people would be older.
But actually, it's not the case. It's more like people being in their middle age, I would say, is not particularly overrepresented among older workers, neither for sure among younger workers. And it's true that when we started that, we were also relatively surprised about this pattern.
Where are the people doing these high polluting jobs? Are they mostly in urban areas? I would have thought that as well.
Absolutely not. That's really one of the main findings of our work, which is also in line with some previous OECD works on development, is that there is a great amount of spatial heterogeneity in the sense that high polluting jobs are systematically overrepresented in rural areas. So, for example, in Spain, high polluting jobs are more than twice as prevalent in rural areas than they are in the whole country, while they are half less prevalent in urban areas. So the spatial polarization of green and high polluting jobs is really crucial. And that has been documented also in recent work on the green transition and local economic development. That's super important to take into account when you consider the distributional consequences, the possible spatial territorial discontent that you could imagine in this type of transition. We can think about the gilets jaunes, when you think about climate policies. Mm-hmm. So that makes it all the more important to anticipate and act locally.
You have found some quite interesting differences, quite large differences as well. Was that a surprise?
No, I don't think big differences across countries are a surprise. It's not surprising that you get a lot of high polluting jobs in Eastern European countries due to differences in industrial structure, but also energy efficiency and technology. Evidence suggests that there is a lot of heterogeneity within countries. And this really raises an alarm bell about the possible spatially concentrated economic and social risks associated with the green transition. And this has, I think, super important political economy concerns, risk of discontent, and opposition to climate policies.
Well, we've already seen, as you pointed out with the Gilets jaunes, some of that discontent. Your data starts in 2011, and we would assume, we would hope that a green transition is already underway. Are you seeing a decline yet in the number of high polluting jobs?
No, we see very little change in the incidence of high polluting jobs between 2011 and 2019. We stop in 2019. So on average, the change is really super small. We have some exceptions like declines in the share of high polluting jobs in some of the countries where the level is super high, such as the Czech Republic and Slovak Republic, but also in some countries where the level is low, for example, Sweden and the Netherlands. And let me add that, in the papers, we also cover green jobs, as you know, and we also do not see a major increase in the share of green jobs. So in other words, not much is happening yet.
Yet. But we hope that things will happen because that transition has to take place. Now, some people will be listening to this and thinking, we've seen this movie before. It was in the past when there has been a job to reskill low-educated workers who don't have transferable jobs and those jobs have been disappearing. Governments haven't always done a good job of that. How can we make this transition more successful?
We should learn from the errors, I think, that we, including our profession, economists, have made in the judgment of the impact of globalization. This time, we need to anticipate. One lesson from globalization is that moderate aggregate effect can go hand in hand with concentrated losses. So preventing this from happening in the green transition requires understanding the labor market dynamics, measuring the impact, and elaborating appropriate policy responses, which governments have largely failed to anticipate and deploy during the globalization shock. Relative to the globalization episode, this time is different because the green transformation is much more policy-driven. And this should make it easier to anticipate the consequences, prevent distributional losses, and make the most of new opportunities for workers and communities. This time we can make a difference by learning from past errors.
Because what you have provided here is very rigorous evidence that there is a huge distributional effect in the labour market of the best green transition that we could hope for.
Absolutely. But we need to really prevent this distributional effect to amplify existing inequality. For a just transition in the labour market should really reduce the cost for individuals and community requires policies to manage and minimise scaring effect associated with the job losses. So the evidence points to the policy challenges, which are in particular, one, the low progress achieved in terms of reducing the incidence of jobs in high polluting activities, as well as increasing those in less polluting. The inequalities in terms of the social economic composition of high polluting jobs, the pervasive overrepresentation of low educated workers, and third, the spatial divide associated with the geography of high polluting jobs. So for me, achieving progress in reaching environmental objectives requires identifying those workers and those communities at risk of displacement and taking policy action to accompany these people even before they get displaced. And this requires targeted active labor market policies to support job search, training, requalification, but also remove obstacles to geographical relocation, because one obstacle often is the obstacle to geographical mobility. You want to get a job, you have to move, but housing is too expensive and there are various barriers. But at the same time, you need to balance this kind of incentives or helping people to move, but also you don't want to depopulate high polluting places. You also need place-based policies to support economic redeployment and social stabilities in the areas that will be affected by the contraction of high production processes. This is really like a balance you have to achieve between local development and also the need to move around where jobs are.
Let's hope we find that balance. Orseta, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The two papers are both Kauser, Nguyen and Soldani. The first one is Lost in the Green Transition, Measurement and Stylized Facts. It's OECD Economics Department Working Paper 1796. Same authors, A New Measurement Approach for Identifying High-Polluting Jobs Across European Countries. That's paper 1795. They are complementary. One is, more technical than the other. There is also a Vox column based on the papers called Lost in the Green Transition, Measurement and Stylized Facts. Same authors, that came out on the 28th of May, 2024.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Why not subscribe, then you'll never miss an episode. And remember, you can rate and review us as well.